In today's media world of quick and easy stories, Gay Talese is an exception. An influential member of the literary journalism movement since the 60s, Talese is a master of in-depth profiles, telling his stories through detailed scenes. Talese built a name for himself by making stars like Joe DiMaggio and Frank Sinatra seem human, and writes about his career in the memoir A Writer's Life. He told Steve Paulson why he loves The Loser.
Yes, I am among those who do love sports. I'll tell you why. The reason I like being around sports is that you're there. You see the performer. You may be on the sidelines. You might be in the press box. So much of what we write these days, if we're, let's say, a political writer, a foreign correspondent in Iraq or in Afghanistan or somewhere, you write about what people tell you, not what you saw.
Well, it strikes me that you also have tended to do something in particular with your writing about various sports figures. You seem to be more drawn to the losers than the winners.
Well, I think that I've written about some winners, like Muhammad Ali was certainly a winner, but he's a loser too. So many of your great winners are great losers, meaning that they have experienced the depth of falling from the very pinnacle since they're at the top. And like Ali had to fall back not only on his back when he was knocked out by people far inferior in their prime than he and his, but he also lost his voice. He's a victim of Parkinson's, and I tried to communicate with him, and I couldn't do much because I couldn't hear him.
Let me ask you about one of the people you wrote about back in the 60s, Floyd Patterson, who once had been the heavyweight champion, but then you wrote about him after Sonny Liston had knocked him out for the second time. In fact, your story was called The Loser, and I have to say—
That was chosen by an editor, but I did write about Patterson. You know what's good about him? Because he was articulate. He was able to tell you what it was like to be knocked out. And one time I spent days going over the notes and with him of what it was like to be knocked out. What do you think? Do you see stars? You know, all this cliche, you see some guy in the ring and he's on the floor and the cartoonist puts stars up there in the ceiling as if that's what fighters see. So the fighter becomes the chronicler of himself. He becomes the spokesperson for himself. He becomes the reminiscer of this awful experience. In public, going down, losing your, falling on your back and knowing you're in embarrassment for the moment to yourself and to those who supported you, your ring supporters and the people who bet on you to win. And then you have to walk past those people up the aisle. They carry you or help you go to your dressing room. And then the sports writers come storming in there. And what happened? What happened? Why'd you do? How come you got hit? I mean, you know, all that constant harping upon humiliation. I think it's really not a very desirable situation to be in, but he was a champion and he could talk about it.
Mm-hmm. Now, is it true that you interviewed Floyd Patterson 37 times for that story?
Yes. It was for Esquire magazine in the old days, that when you had a lot of room and a lot of time to write. It's not true now. But in the old days, I wrote for Esquire about this, and they put the title The Loser. Now, that's not fair, really. That title, I have nothing to do, as you know, writers don't write the titles. But I thought, this guy's a winner, really. You know why? Because he gets knocked down more than any other. He lost more fights, and he got knocked down more than any fighter that I knew about. But he got up off the floor more. I mean, that's not a record you can prove, but it is a record, I think, that is relevant. People who get off the floor, who rise from their declining and diminished state, as a losing fighter is personifies the diminished state, lying on your back in a reclining position. Mm-hmm. But he climbs up. And he climbs up and tries to keep going. That thing's great.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I want to ask you a little bit about how you wrote that story because, I mean, one of your trademarks is you spend an awful lot of time with the subjects you write about. And you must have spent days or weeks with Floyd Patterson and, you know, interviewed him multiple times. Doesn't he get sick of you?
Well, it isn't that he gets sick of me or I get sick of him. What you have to do what I want to do is patience, and you have to have an eye and an ear for more than just the person you're talking about. I'm more an atmospheric writer. I'm interested in writing about situations and scenes, rather like maybe a filmmaker or a cameraman or a person who is a painter or a novelist. You know, it isn't that you're writing, you're describing. You know, when Capote wrote the great nonfiction book that was called In Cold Blood, it doesn't start with a murder. It starts with a description of the Kansas farmland in which the Cutter family, the family that was murdered. But the opening of that is atmospheric, as my books are all very atmospheric, and the articles as well.
Well, it strikes me that you also did that. I mean, that whole business of telling a story through scenes with your famous magazine story about Frank Sinatra. Frank Sinatra has a cold. I mean, it's one
Same
scene
thing.
After another, almost like one set piece after another.
You're absolutely right. And like Sinatra's famous, but I didn't write about Sinatra as a famous person. I wrote about him as a person who meant a lot to those who depended on him for their own sense of well-being and welfare. And I wrote about stardom, not Sinatra's only, but the idea of being celebrated and a star figure in that time in the United States. And now we're even more of a celebrity culture. Mm-hmm. But I was really writing almost the anti-celebrity piece then. And I'm now writing like the anti-memoir. I don't like the memoir necessarily because it's very linear and it's very me, me, me. It's almost narcissistic, and I don't really share that interest in being that way.
Let me ask you about another magazine piece you wrote back in the 60s, getting at this whole issue of puncturing celebrity, your story about Joe DiMaggio after he retired. It was the mid-60s. He was still one of the most famous athletes alive, and that story you did was famous for the way it cut through his celebrity in a way that really had never been done before, it seems to me, with a star of that magnitude.
Well, it's really about mythology. The DiMaggio story was connected to Marilyn Monroe. That marriage really did capture the imagination of the American people. And of course, you know, after she married DiMaggio, she married Arthur Miller, and that affected his life. He wrote plays about her. He didn't necessarily call her Marilyn Monroe, but everyone knew. But my story about DiMaggio was not when he was at the top of his game. I often write about people like this who years and years and years later are living in the past but still have to deal with the present. This is true of DiMaggio. It's true of Sinatra in a way. And it's true of all the stories I write. So it isn't, I wouldn't, if I was 25 years old now and I was working for, let's say, Vanity Fair, just as an example, I wouldn't want to do the stories you'd have to do to get into Vanity Fair, because the stories you have to do to get a cover story or a lead story in Vanity Fair is about some celebrity. And I mean the here and now celebrity. Mm-hmm. You would have to do, I don't know who the biggest movie star is. I can't really tell you. But whoever has got the latest, you know, Baskin-Robbins Flavor of the Month 4-star label on their nose would be what would appeal to a celebrity magazine like Vanity Fair. And the whole idea of just temporary interest, topicality, I back away from what is topical, what is of the moment.
Mm-hmm. Well, speaking of history, in every history of the new journalism, your name is mentioned very prominently. Tom Wolfe has said you were the person who really started the new journalism. Well, do you see it that way?
Oh, no. I mean, Tom is a friend of mine, and he was flattering, and he was giving me attention back in the 60s when I didn't have much attention at all, but he did, because he's famous himself, open up my work to many of the people who are academicians and, you know, professors of writing, and they started reading me. And I owe Tom Wolfe thanks for that, but also I don't owe him thanks for this. He created this term called new journalism. I wasn't necessarily doing anything journalistic or anything new. There were people writing back in the 30s. I mean, John Steinbeck, Ernest Hemingway were doing journalism. There were many people who are more close to my age, but before my time, who were doing good journalism. John Hersey in his story of the Hiroshima, that's very good. But the problem with the term that Tom Wolfe coined, in a way, there are a lot of so-called later on new journalists who faked it. They were like James Fry. And I didn't want to be linked with people who were all filled with opinion. They're very impressionistic. They didn't do the footwork, the legwork. You know what I mean by that.
Mm-hmm. The reporting.
Out there, the reporting, the serious reporting. There are people that half report. You know, they just get one fact right and they don't take the time to get it all right. And they would then be called new journalists because they had a flashy way of writing. It was very attention-getting and very unlike me. They would use first person, me, 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 all the way through. And I'm not going to belabor the point, but even Hunter Thompson, I don't want to be mixed up with. Hunter Thompson was a flashy writer. He was very entertaining. I mean, but it was exaggerated. And I have mixed emotions. I don't want to be a new journalist. I don't think that I am anything new. I think that what I was doing was storytelling. And storytelling is as old as, it's centuries and centuries old. And I associate myself with being a storyteller. That's all.
Gay Talese is a celebrated writer and journalist. His memoir is called A Writer's Life. Steve Paulson spoke with him.